From the studios of WMAA-FMHD, welcome to another edition of How You're Living, a show about life with the Funderburks. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the professionals and the guest, and not of WMAA-FMHD Radio or North Carolina A&T State University. And now, here's your host, Dr. Nanette and Keith Funderburk.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of How You Living, a show about life with the Funderburks. I am Dr. Nanette Funderburk, your resident psychotherapist, and as always, I have with me today...
Oh, Dr. Funderburk, you got your boy, your main man.
Yes.
The guy that has your last name, Keith Funderburk.
Oh, I thought I have your last name.
Oh, dang, I done jacked that up. Brother, that's bad when you gonna say it like that. You know. Yeah, you're just right. You got my last name, Funderburk. Let's stand corrected now.
We could change it. We should be, because you know some people do that. They combine their names and they make a totally new name. We could have been Fundersmith.
Fundersmith. No. My dad ain't saying that. He no.
Okay, so then you're the main man.
Yes, you are
my husband.
And your baby daddy.
Yes, that too.
That's right. That's right. You know, because brothers got to make sure we put that on the air. Every now and then it slips.
Oh, my goodness.
So you just got to make sure. Okay.
That's right.
And so, Dr. Funderburk, you know, I try to give you a theme name, and especially in light of our guest today.
I know.
And so I want you to call me Brother Bailiff.
Brother Bailiff? Mm-hmm. Okay, Brother Bailiff. Why are we calling you Brother Bailiff?
Yeah, Brother Bailiff, because, you know, that's the, you know, whenever there's a, you know, like a judge or a legal show, but there's always like a trusted bailiff.
Okay.
And so, that way they help, you know, people get crazy every now and then in court, because, you know, your cousins. See, my cousins don't do that.
Okay.
See, when my cousins go to court, they sit down. And, you know, probably...
Why are your cousins in court?
Okay, see, that's another conversation, Dr. Funderburk. I can't tell
they're
everything.
They're the attorneys. They're the judges. That's what you were supposed to say.
Okay, that's what it was. Yes. Yeah, because, see, I can't tell everything about my cousins.
Okay.
You know, they still in a work in progress.
Let's move on. So Brother Bailiff, that is a nod to our esteemed guest that we have with us today. Today we have City Attorney, Greensboro City Attorney, Laura Cubbage. And she's not only
what?
City Attorney. I should have said this part first.
What's that?
She has got a whole lot of Aggie pride.
Oh, man.
She is an A&T. That's right. She's an A&T alum. So we are so glad to have Attorney Cubbage with us here today. So, City Attorney, how you living?
Oh, man. I am living good. Enjoying all aspects of life. Newlywed.
Did you just put that out on the air?
I did.
Newlywed.
We got the scoop.
Wow. Okay. So are we able to disclose this person?
Can we say hello to this brother? You see, you got us all tripped up here,
Dr. Funderburk. See now,
we want to make sure we say it right, so we're gonna let you say it.
No, look, I can say it. That's right, because I know it's my boy. Got to be my boy.
Who would that be?
See, that's what I'm saying. You need to let her say it.
No, he can say it.
I'm gonna say, dang.
Boy.
That's right, my boy, my homeboy. He started out as my barber, now he's my chef.
That's right.
And everything else. That's right. But you know, really, you know, for those who don't know, I know, Dr. Funderburk, close your mouth.
Oh my gosh.
I gotta turn Dr. Funderburk down. I'm like, close your mouth, Dr. Funderburk.
Up off the floor.
I mean, really.
I love it. Okay, so we still haven't said the name.
Yeah, I thought we said it was so Brother Tim Butler.
Yes.
You have an extensive background in law. You've been an attorney. You were DA or assistant DA? What?
Yeah.
Remind me.
I started the legal career off as an assistant DA.
Okay.
And then moved on to assistant attorney general.
Okay.
And then moved on to district court judge, then superior court judge. And that's where I ended the judicial part of the legal career.
Okay.
Wow. So, like, you, like, have held almost every post from an attorney. You on both ends of this thing then, huh?
Yeah, especially when you're talking about public law and public service law. Yeah, I have just about every post.
Wow.
That you can in the state, you know, when it comes to law. I haven't hit the appellate courts, but you know, you never know what's out there.
That's right.
You never
know.
Right.
You never
know. Right. Clearly, we never know.
That's right.
Right.
So when you made this decision, I mean, what made you, I mean, you left the courtroom and now you're down there at the Melbourne Municipal Building in the city council room. What made you make that decision?
Well, it's like this. I think Dr. Funderburk just kind of said it where it was, or you said it, that I kind of served in every role, right? Mm-hmm. Enjoyed my time thoroughly, serving on the bench, valued the integrity, the impartiality that the role demanded. But the sitting city attorney at the time had been talking to me since about December of 2022 about transitioning into municipal law, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it took me that long to think about it. And to be honest, the intersectionality of state and municipalities and the judicial system and those policies and those laws and the municipalities, a lot of people don't get it and don't understand it. And mm-hmm. I have to admit that at first I didn't either.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they say public service and community service actually starts at home, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that starts with municipal law, mm-hmm. right? And so the more I got to looking at it and researching it, I thought the municipal policy and the civic engagement and the public service from a municipal standpoint is what also impacts the residents of Guilford County and residents of Greensboro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even mm-hmm. quicker and faster than that of a state level.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to take my judicial background and all the things that I've did and learned and in transition over here. And it allowed me to, I guess, in unique ways to advise, to negotiate, you know, to take the hard questions and positions and stances. And
mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know what, I'm going to accept this challenge mm-hmm. and get deeper into the public service and community service. And when I say deeper, some people say, well, you couldn't be much deeper, Judge Covidge. We called you the people's judge, right?
Right, right.
However, but if anybody that knows me knows that my passion is youth and sitting on the bench, there's only with so much I could say and do, because with youth that are in positions where they may end up having an interaction with the legal system, because you may come before me.
Mm.
So, and then once you do, I have to be completely hands off, because I'm the one that might be presiding over a case that our youth are in. And then once they raised the age in North Carolina to make juveniles 18, mm-hmm. I knew it was more critical. So let's get our hands on our youth. And so now I can get into the schools a lot deeper. I can interact. I can volunteer. I can actually do more, more with the youth to try to keep them out of the judicial system in the first place.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to do something once they get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a good transition, and it's been a challenging transition, but I love challenges. And so that's been exciting to me, actually.
Mm-hmm. Wow. See, this is just so exciting, just hearing, again, from our city attorney, Laura Covidge. Again, you're listening to How You Living, A Show About Life with the Funderburks. You got Keith and Dr. Nanette Funderburk. And I tell you, you know what, we just cannot have a more talented individual than we do today. You know, I want to always, when you think about youth and you think about young people, and even right here on the campus, there are some folks that are thinking about pursuing law, but then they don't know what they should do. What kind of got you interested in doing this whole, I guess, you know, municipal law and all the different things that you've done? What kind of set you off in that direction?
Well, the story that set me off was in the legal direction, first of all, was my trade is being a barber. So stood behind a barber chair cutting for 17 years. And you get to hear a lot of stories, talk about a lot of different things. And a lot of my customers had interactions with the judicial system, and it seemed like they could not get out of it. And mm-hmm. so I always wanted to try to help them and find a way to... It's okay to have an interaction, but don't marry the judicial system, right? Well, mm-hmm. they seem to be married to the judicial system mm-hmm. and deeply committed mm-hmm. to the marriage.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, no, it's time to divorce this system and, you know, do some things without the judicial system. And so, and trying to find ways to help folks, it meant going to college and going to law school. And so that's what I ended up doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then just over the years, I started mentoring people to say, hey, the legal field is a great place for you to be. And public law is a great place for you to be. Mm-hmm. It's not as lucrative as the private sector,
mm-hmm.
but it is just as, if not more, fulfilling. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you realize that the effort that you put into someone's case,
mm-hmm.
no matter which side of the table that you're sitting on in the courtroom,
mm-hmm.
you've just changed somebody's life that day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about it. I mean, completely changed mm-hmm. it, because mm-hmm. I tell people all the time, myself nor anybody that I know can spend a 24 to 72 hour stint in jail for anything.
Wow.
It's going to change our whole life
mm-hmm.
completely.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so when you are, if you're on the prosecuting side and you're trying to prosecute someone to the point of incarceration, that's going to change their life.
Mm-hmm.
But the law gives prosecutors the discretion to actually do alternative things other than incarceration, to get them into programs, to get them some type of help. And sometimes when we're talking about those with mental health issues or even drug addiction issues,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
we can't jail those issues that need to be treated.
That's right.
And so being able to serve in the court system and our specialty courts changed the life of those people who could not otherwise, just by being out here, get the help that they needed because they don't have the resources.
So
it's unfortunate. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I wanted to piggyback on something you just said there. You were talking about the specialty courts, and one of them is the mental health court, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you say a little more about that? And because I think a lot of folks don't even know that that exists.
Yeah. So mostly now, and in most of our major counties around the state, we have specialty courts, and mental health court is one of our specialty courts. And so what we are finding, and Dr. Funderburk, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, because
mm-hmm.
you're the expert here, mm-hmm. but in a lot of things that happen in people's everyday lives,
mm-hmm.
a lot of it has to do with mental health challenges.
Oh, absolutely.
And it was such a stigma for mm-hmm. so many years around seeking mental health help
mm-hmm.
that I think society as a whole just dropped the ball completely,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Just dropped the ball. I don't know anyone who hasn't had a mental health episode.
Mm-hmm.
And when
mm-hmm.
I say that, I don't mean a total breakdown,
mm-hmm.
do this, and do this. But I'm talking about things that the loss of a loved one
mm-hmm.
that you never imagined your life causes severe depression.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people don't seek grief counseling
mm-hmm.
and instead they self-medicate. And then the self-medication leads to drug abuse mm-hmm. and use or alcoholism or some kind of other dependency when for real, you just need to get to a counselor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You really just need to get to a counselor. And if you do need medication, you might need medication management, or you might need medication, period.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of times people are not in a position where they have the insurance
mm-hmm.
and or they have the liquid funds to get this medication.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, when you have these mental health issues that go untreated, they often end up with behavioral issues.
Yes.
And the only thing, unfortunately, society knows with behavioral issues is to seek out the judicial system, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
the fortunate part about seeking out the judicial system is if you do have to come into the judicial system and we can identify and recognize that there are some mental health challenges there, we now have the specialty court to say, this charge that you got because of this behavioral issue, mm-hmm. you know, we kind of can see that there's something else going on here. So let's try to get you over mental health court. And the mental health court pairs them up with sponsor or social worker, for lack of a better term, mm-hmm. who pairs them up with treatment. Mm-hmm. And the state pays for that. And wow. the state even will pay for that medication. And, you know, you have to go through our mental health court system is once you get in, it's at least a year long. Mm. And so every month you're going to court, but it's only for the folks that are in the mental health court system to keep up, and it's accountability. Yeah, right?
That's great. Mm-hmm.
Let's show where you are. Let's see if it's working. If it's not working, let's see where we need to tweak. It might mean a medication adjustment, right? And then if once you get through that, and not only do they do that, but the social workers help with helping to find jobs, helping mm-hmm. to find housing, helping to just get folks stable.
Mm-hmm. Just give folks a chance.
Yes, give folks a chance. Mm-hmm. And so, again, the unfortunate part is you have to come into the judicial system to get these services, but the fortunate part is now they are there.
Yes. Yes, that is a fortunate part. And I loved the way you kind of started this part of the conversation off. You said, you know, who among us has not had a mental health issue? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that you had some level of psychosis or anything like that. But I always say on this show, the common colds of mental health are depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. So they pop up all the time, and they are as common as a cold. So she was not wrong, y'all. Wow. She was not wrong about that.
So Doctor,
speak that into existence.
That's right. So we got, of course, Laura Cubbage, the city attorney for Greensboro. We're right here on How You Living, a show about life with the Funderburks. We got Keith and Dr. Nanette Funderburk. So, Attorney Cubbage, again, a lot of folks that listen to the show, they look like me, they look like you. And, you know, in the last few years, and I know this is a tough one, you know, the city police, you know, we've had some questionable interactions. I mean, even probably in the last few months where, you know, people of color are kind of like, GPD may not be my best friend. So what can residents right here in Guilford County and Alamance and some of these other Forsyth, what can we do to ensure fairness and respect from local police?
Well, here's what I will say to everyone. Mm-hmm. First of all, get in your local organizations or go to your local organizations, any group setting, and contact the police department and ask for our officers to come and speak to your organization, speak to your group, speak to your youth, speak to your school. Because a lot of what's going on when it comes to the public and the law enforcement is lack of knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of what's going on is looking at TV or getting secondhand or third or fourth hand information from other people about what the law is, and it's not really what the law is. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is false narratives that are out there, and we tend to believe it. And so, like Keith, you just said something about what can we do to get more respect from the police. So there is this narrative that police don't respect you. Now, don't get me wrong, they're bad actors in every sorority fraternity, right?
Right.
No matter what it is. But overall, what, you know, the consensus is a false narrative that police don't respect, police don't do this. And we have this thing that's going on now that talks about things that police officers are doing, like regulatory stops. There's no such thing, right? But that's coming up consistently and consistently and consistently. There's no such thing. Wow. But we have to continue to say it to get people to understand we don't do regulatory stops, right? Okay. I was just talking to a group of folks on Saturday and saying things like, for instance, if an officer pulls you over, an officer has every right in just talking to you to ask you to step out the car. Mm-hmm. And we train the officers. This office goes to police headquarters and to the different what we call lineups, which is the gathering of police of units before they go on their shift to talk about, you know, what's going on, what the last shift did, or you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But we give like little tidbits, right? And so when we talk to officers, when we teach our classes, we tell officers, if you can, always ask someone to step out the car. Here's reasons why. Because you're on the side of the road. First and foremost, it's a safety issue for that officer, because he's on the side of the road. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it's a person is less likely just to pull off and run over that officer, or their car swipe that officer and the officer gets knocked out into the roadway. And then a car comes by and runs over our officer.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. Also, statistics show that most officers, if they're shot during a traffic stop, it's because of that passenger or that driver being seated in a car and that quick movement of pulling that gun and shooting the officer. So as someone step out the car, take them to behind the car to a point of safety. When two people are standing up talking to one another, it's less intimidating for both parties. For both parties. Does the officer have to tell someone why they're asking them to step out the car? The law doesn't say that they have to. We train that you should.
Okay.
That you should. There's also a difference between, and catch this, there's a difference between, Dr. Funderburk, could I get you to step out the car? That sounds like a request, right? And it is. We train, don't say it in that. I need you to step out the car.
Okay.
That sounds like a command, right? Because if you give Dr. Funderburk the option and Dr. Funderburk refuses you, you know, and you pull him out the car, the optics of that is not good. If you say to Dr. Funderburk, I need you to step out the car, and they refuse you and you pull him out the car, the optics of that looks 10 times better.
Gotcha.
Right. And so it's things like that. And most of the time you will see, what you stopped me for? Why do I have to get out the car? Well, an officer is going to tell you why they stopped you. And like here in Greensboro, that's policy. That's a police policy. You have to tell someone why they stopped you. It is also part of their unspoken policy to tell them why you want them to step out the car and let them know it's for safety reasons.
Okay.
But the law doesn't demand that.
Gotcha.
The law doesn't demand that. And when the officer decides they don't want to tell it, a lot of times things tend to go south and, you know, real quickly. And then there is an allegation of police brutality. But if an officer says, I need you to do this, and you don't do this, then you have at that point resist.
Okay.
And obstruct and delay. What are you resisting, obstructing, and delaying? They're going to say, I'm not resisting arrest. No, you're not. You're obstructing justice and you're delaying the officer in carrying out their official duties.
Okay.
And resist, obstruct, and delay is all in that charge. And so I have said to some of our sororities and fraternities, because you all are all service, community service oriented groups, right? Call these officers over to talk to you when you have your meetings. That way, when you go talk to the youth, when you go to the school, when you have your programs, when you're training your young men, if you're a fraternity, or your young women, if you're a sorority, you can train them on the right things because you got it firsthand from the officers. And we can get those better interactions. The next thing is we've got to teach our children this generation and a couple generations above this one and below this one have an issue with authority and hierarchy, right?
Yeah.
I know all of us are in the same generation, so we don't really have that issue because we were taught.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we still fear some of our elders smacking us in the mouth. That's right. Come off disrespectful, right?
Mm-hmm.
To our other elders. But police are in an authoritative position. So just respect that authority and things will go better. Don't try to be a hero mm-hmm. on the side of the road because mm-hmm. it's not going to play well for you.
Right.
That officer has to have their badge displayed. Get that officer's badge. That name is on that badge, or ask the name. Make a note of it. Write it down or make a mental note of it. And then go through the proper channels. Like, go back and tell someone that you do respect. Make a call to professional standards or to one of the assistant chiefs of police of a department, and let them know what your experience was. And they have a legal obligation to look into that.
Hmm.
Wow. See, we're going to have Attorney Cubbage back, y'all.
This is good information.
This is like a part one and a part two. So we're going to definitely have Attorney Cubbage back later this season, y'all, because she needs to finish this, because black folk, we need to stop acting crazy when the police pull you over. Get out the car. Don't act a fool. And just get out the car.
But you can ask a question is what
right.
I'm hearing Attorney Cubbage say.
Yes, and they want you to ask questions. And because council meetings are public, I'll just, go into, we had a parent that came and spoke about the allegations of police brutality because one of her sons that was in a car made a video and put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the video was just yelling and screaming and, a lot of movement of the camera that makes you think that someone was getting abused by the police.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now that video is out there, it's been publicly released.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's like, oh, this is what really happened. Yeah, this is what really happened. And so don't be so quick to jump to things. But at the same time that the mother came into the council meeting and talked about the police brutality that her son was subjected to, mm-hmm. this was her first statement. I know he had a gun, but...
Oh.
Yeah. So, no, he or they didn't have a gun. There were several guns in the car.
Oh, wow.
And there was an assault rifle in the car.
Oh, wow. Okay.
An AR-style weapon in the car. But nobody had licenses to carry. Nobody had concealed carries.
Mm.
Nobody had this. So there is no, I know he had a gun, but... Mm. What happened to the days where, thank you, officer, because you might have saved my son's life that night,
mm-hmm.
or you might have saved somebody else's son's or daughter's life that night, or mother or father or sister or brother's life that night,
mm-hmm.
because obviously I had no idea my son had the gun, and therefore I had no idea where he was going and what he was going to do with it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I could be walking softly behind him, wondering what went wrong,
mm-hmm.
or I could be putting money on his commissary.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Okay.
But they don't get those. Mm-hmm. They don't get those.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
That's what happened. So I'm not trying to say anything negative about anybody's son or anybody's
right.
parenting,
right.
but together, I'm saying together, we need to tell our children, if you don't know what you're doing when you're carrying a gun and you don't have the proper certifications to carry that gun, don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
don't do it.
We're going to have to have you back, Attorney Cubbage, because this is, I think, information that we've all need to hear. And I think this allows us to demystify some of the processes that are out there and kind of get rid of some of the rumor and conjecture and things like that are out there. So, if you all have comments or questions, please make sure that you are messaging us. And as always, make sure you join us again next time on How You Livin', a show about life with the Funderburks. Take care, y'all.
That wraps up another edition of How You Livin' with the Funderburks. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the professionals and the guests, and not of WNAA-FMHD Radio or North Carolina A&T State University. As always, WNAA-FM invites your feedback, so give us a call during normal business hours at 336-334-7936. This program was produced in the studios of 90.1 FM WNAA and is the sole property of WNAA-FM-HD and North Carolina A&T State University. No portion of this program may be aired, played, or reproduced without written permission from WNAA-FM-HD. Join us again next week for another edition of How You Living with the Funderburks on 90.1 FM WNAA.